Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In this episode, I speak with Lori McGinley, a private advisor who specializes in guiding her clients to transform their careers. She is a licensed architect and the author of the new book, The Dissolve. Lori describes her firm in three words: clear, catalytic, and uncomfortable. And she's not going to apologize for making things uncomfortable, especially if it means improving her clients' lives. Because Lori is a guide, a guardian, and I compare it to a jaquin. A jaquin is a modern mythical creature. It is a jaguar with wings. And like a jaquin, Lori isn't afraid to use her claws to tackle the invisible barriers holding her clients back from their career goals. She is the guardian, helping her clients soar to new heights in their careers. In this conversation, we talk about burnout in the construction industry and designing a career that energizes you instead of weighing you down. And the way you refine your business is by utilizing Lori's three-step process in her book, The Dissolve, so that you can name, soften, and then move through the invisible barriers that are in the way of your career success. Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Kangas, and today I am meeting with Lori McGinley, and she has gone above and beyond architecture and is now a transformation guide, a best-selling author, and a keynote speaker. And all of this is grounded in her education at the University of Minnesota, which is where we met Lori. Welcome.
Thanks, Katie. I'm excited to have a chance to talk about this journey.
Very cool. Well, tell us, you work at Vialucent, but you founded Vialucent. And what does that mean? What is Vialucent?
Yeah, when I first founded this company, it felt really, really important to have a very special name. And one of the things that I've learned after 6 years of doing that is the name doesn't matter. So Vialucent is just where my email address is. But the story that it came to be is it just means illuminated path. And when I started doing this out, what I realized that I wanted to do is I wanted to be the person who would guide you out of where you are that you no longer want to be into the life that you want to have. And a lot of times for a lot of people, and for me personally, that felt a little bit like standing alone in the dark, not knowing where the path was, not being willing to go back into the house where the light is, but you know, wanting to go forward, but not having any way to navigate that. So Vialucent truly is, we are actually what illuminates the path. It's not the flashlight in your pocket. It's not your headlamp. It's us.
It's finding that light within, that energy within. That's so cool. So where did this start? How did this idea, this light that you followed, start from grad school?
This actually started in middle school for me, which for me was in about 1990. So the name truly comes from one of the things I used to do when I was 13 and I was exploring my own power. I think a lot of children do this at this age. We had moved out into the country inside of an orchard. It wasn't our orchard, but our house was inside of it. And we moved there when I was 11. And at around 13, I was like, I can just wait until they're asleep and then I can leave. And I did these self-guided tours in the orchard and beyond the orchard up into the bluffs. And I would leave the house and the kind of cone of the yard light. If you've ever, you know, if you grew up in the country, everybody has a yard light. And I would just, you know, feel the wet grass on my bare feet. And this was way before cell phones. And I never brought a flashlight. And I had been told that it was dangerous. I had been told that I was not to go there, that nobody went out at night, especially not a kid. And what I realized as I was out there, that the predators that might have been out there didn't want anything to do with me. That the world looked very different when you sat still and found calm in the dark. And I just started exploring what was possible. Around that time, I started to realize that one of my friends in particular, who was really smart, like way smarter than anybody else in our class, started kind of dialing back his intellect because he was getting picked on, which happens in middle school, right? And I realized that I was very, very drawn to him and kind of whispering in his ear about, you know, how to be his brilliant self in the face of all of the teenage behavior. So it really truly started 36 years ago in middle school, and has followed me through every step of my career. I practiced this. I was doing this in grad school when we met. I did it in the career that I had between undergrad and grad school. I was doing this in my early days in architecture. I was doing this in job trailers when I was an owner's rep. And now it is the primary focus of what I do.
That's so cool to be finding that inner skill. And I think that's what I'm trying to talk about with Flying Solo. It's so aligned to being aware of your personal strengths and following those forwards. And so what kind of hopes and dreams did you set forth to accomplish by starting the Elucent?
Gosh, this is such a brilliant question. Interestingly, my work anniversary is on Sunday. And so 6 years ago, I really truly just wanted to explore what I could do with this. So at the time that I left my last full-time job, this move was very validating for what I had healed from. It was very empowering for what I had learned and what I had figured out and mastered in my own personal experience. And it was extremely rewarding to just see who would come on the journey with me. So when I truly first set out, I really, really just wanted to see, is this a viable business where I can pay my bills and deeply, profoundly enjoy bringing people on this journey? Because, Katie, I designed my job. I designed present tense my job. And I love it. And I know it's not very Minnesotan to brag, but I have the greatest job on the planet.
That is amazing.
So what I set out to do really was just to have a job that didn't feel like work, that was contributing positively to the world, and it was doing what I love doing. And it looks very different today than it did 6 years ago. It's gone through a couple of iterations. One of the things that has really helped me from architecture is how to rapid prototype and let variations fall to the floor and scrap them. I'm going through another iteration right now. I'm kind of in a massive overhaul of what I'm doing. And I'm very comfortable doing that because of the training and experience that I've had in architecture.
So how would you summarize that in a nutshell for those who may not be trained as architects?
I'm digging in the memory banks for probably early days of grad school, maybe even early days of undergrad. One of the first things that we learn is how to not become emotionally attached to the first idea. I don't know if you have any memory of this or if it stuck out for you.
Oh, yeah.
It might have even been an undergrad project. I remember that I had kind of hurt my right index finger cutting contours in chipboard. And I was really emotionally connected to what I had produced as a first version. And I remember the moment my critic was like, is this what you want it to be? And I had to kind of come to reckoning with this thing that I had hurt my body for actually was not at all what I wanted to design. And I had to take this very precious thing that I had spent a lot of money and I probably should have just put it in the trash, but I kind of set it on the edge of my desk for a while because I was still emotionally connected to it. And throughout that semester, I learned how to stop before I invested in a precious object. This is a really awful thing that I learned that's no longer probably appropriate to say, but in 1998, when I was in that class, we called it killing one in the nest, which is, I think, an awful thing, but it's the most accurate description of what we learned, to not invest in it, to not fall in love with it. And when, I know I don't have to explain this to you, but when we do this, you can flip through ideas and test them very, very quickly in a rapid prototyping kind of way so that the thing you actually invest time and effort and love into, you've spent the time asking the right question.
And testing it, honestly, and being self-critical about it. There's this whole wealth of other skills that you're applying to this one hard decision.
Exactly. That's such a beautiful way to say that. And I truly think what we learned was about really about interrogating the problem so that you are asking the right question. You know, as education and practice went on, it felt a lot more like rapid prototyping questions than it even felt like rapid prototyping sketches.
And I think that's what's so interesting about describing what architects do, because we're taught this thought process. And yes, it does influence buildings. It does influence the project teams we work on, but it's a skill that I think is taught in some engineering programs to be that problem solver, but it's coming at it from a more generalist background. And especially where we went at the University of Minnesota, there were a lot of teachers encouraging that and really trying to break down those boundaries that other Not that other professions are doing this, but it does feel like silos sometimes, like this is the architecture department, this is the humanities department, this is the business department. And I think there was a conscious effort while we were going through school to break that down and unite the different disciplines and really broaden what it means to be a generalist as an architect. And that design thinking just permeated all of it.
Absolutely. And I don't know about your experience at the, when I did a dual degree. So when I did my second thesis project, I went way outside of the School of Architecture. I went into geology. I went into people who understood volcanoes and layers of soil and seismic activity and hydrology. I went way outside of Rapson Hall. And even much, much more so in practice, the architect really is just the conductor, right? So we have to go way into any field that that particular site needs us to go into and understand just enough about it to be able to coordinate it.
So true. Oh, I love that. And so now, how did you broaden yourself into this new field? Did you do it alone or did you?
It was hard.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It was hard. And it felt a little bit like I had to peel back layers, right? So my first job out of, you know, the last time that I operated drafting software was in the late summer of 2015. And I couldn't, I don't know that at the time I could have gone directly from that to what I'm doing. It was a little bit like that first model in undergrad that probably needed to go in the trash, but it sat on the corner of my desk. So the first job that I took outside of practicing as an architect was I was teaching at Dakota County Technical College. They have a two-year associates program. So I taught two semesters there. One of the things I was teaching was how to operate Revit, right? So I was teaching how to read drawings. I was teaching very, very introductory structures classes. So I was teaching what I knew, and it was a very direct translation, but it was absolutely not an architecture practice. And so I think the year that I was there helped me kind of gain some comfort in applying those skills outside of a firm.
Mm.
Where I went from there was I worked for a structural products manufacturer, a cross-laminated timber manufacturer. And the role that I took on there was I was in architectural education and sales. I was also in product design, and I helped them build the drafting department. So it felt, again, very aligned to the built environment. I was doing creative stuff. I was leading a drafting department. I was teaching architects about cross-laminated timber, how to use it, when to use it, how it interfaced with the code, right? I was still using the code book. Still had all my tabs in the code book. And after that job, I really had to come to terms with the reality that I was burned out. So at that point, I had gotten to a place in life where my experience of the world felt a lot like walking around underneath three sopping wet wool blankets. I was in the world, but the world was kind of muted. I was kind of separate from it, even though I was there. It felt very difficult to just exist. I was exhausted. And I felt, I don't know if fragile is really the right word. It's like my resilience was very low, right? So I ended up probably being more reactive than I wanted to be. And I didn't know what was possible. I just knew that I couldn't keep walking on that path.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit like to the earlier story that I told you, I found myself in the middle of the night on a path that was not good for me, not knowing how to find the other one. So at that point, I moved to next layer. I became an owner's rep for Minneapolis Public Schools. So now I was in a position to be representing the district with specialized knowledge. And I was hiring the architecture and engineering team and ushering projects through design. And then we, you know, putting projects out to bid and then hiring the contractor and going all the way through construction and then handing back to the maintenance team. So taking projects all the way, you know, the planning department gave us the concept and the budget and then took it all the way through closeout. That felt really connected to the built environment, but the job in and of itself was really a lot more about conversation. I wasn't in drafting software. I went, did a deep dive into contracts during that job. I became a contracts expert, but I was really, really, really separate from the practice of architecture. And I think only from that place could I finally find comfort into launching into something that has nothing to do with the built environment. Like what I'm doing now has literally nothing to do with the built environment. I still have my code book with all the tabs in it. I haven't opened it up in years, but it's still sitting on my shelf. And metaphorically, it's like I finally allowed that beloved model to go on to its next life.
And so What are the types of clients you take on for this? Or, you know, you do projects. You don't do building projects, but boy, you put a lot of effort into the books that you've written and other special projects that are aligned with Via Lucent. So who are you serving right now with the content you're creating?
I have found that in the last 6 years, the people who do the best with me and I enjoy working with the most are people who absolutely have been able to win, very, very high achieving people who love winning. They're people who have always been ahead of their peers, and they've come to the realization that it's not working anymore, but it's kind of like a quiet internal whisper, like, I can't really tell you, but I know something is very wrong. They do the best with me. I do the best with them. And when I'm working with a team, it's a team that usually has their employee retention challenge has become too expensive. Or it's the leader of a team that their team has kind of sat them down and said, hey, I know you're leading this and you're helping us, but you're also the problem. And what I do will help either an individual or a team understand where they're coming at something with a very narrow focus. And to bring this back into architectural terms, I'm sure you can understand that when you're looking at a project and you have a very narrow focus and you pop from thing to thing to thing to thing, it's really easy to miss the nuances of integration, you know, and how everything works as a full system. When a human comes to me with a very pointed focus, essentially what we're doing together at a very high level is I'm helping them have experiences so they feel safe enough to have a broad focus again. So they feel safe enough to understand that everything that happens around them is not a personal attack that they have to defend themselves from. And when they do this, they get a lot better at communication. They get a lot better at listening. They allow others to step forward and they don't feel threatened by it. Collaboration goes up. And nobody in 6 years, Katie, has hired me for their personal life. Like, that's not what I talk about or what I do. And I'm almost all of them end up letting me know that also their inner circle relationships get better.
And that's a beautiful way to address that we are holistic people, that we do love to talk about our work and define ourselves by our work and put that title behind us, but to acknowledge more of the full life. And it does. It impacts both ways, as you said, with your blanket. That totally changes your personal life when your work feels like those weighted blankets.
Yeah. And at the weighted blanket phase, I felt two things, that neither of which was good. I felt like I was not doing a very good job of focusing at work. I could feel it internally. I'd always been able to find focus and achieve and do that. You know, I'm one of those people who likes to win and is good at it. But I also wasn't able to leave work at work and be a good home person. And neither one of those things felt like they were supporting me or the company I worked for or my family or my one and only parenting goal, which is to have adult children who periodically enjoy spending time with me.
It's a good baseline.
Yeah, that's it. I only have one. That's it.
I like that. So the team approach, that people can get so focused on the project, they're not looking to the side and making sure that they're all good and that the machine that they're building together is working well. That's kind of the culture aspect. And then when you're working with someone individually, it's their own internal culture and everything. So these are probably not laborers that you're working with. These are more desk jobs. This is more any topic, any industry.
Interesting that you brought up laborers. I would truly love to do this work with laborers for a very intentional reason. I have accidentally become a burnout expert, and construction has the second highest suicide rate in the country. Katie, the heroes who build our built environment for the second highest rate of suicide in the country. And suicide is the last symptom, right? It's burnout before that. It's challenging interpersonal relationships before that. It's accidents at work because you're exhausted because you're not sleeping. It's all these things before that. I have not yet had the opportunity to work with laborers, and I truly would love to. So yes, generally I'm working with people who have office jobs, and generally working with people who are leaders in their company, who are leading teams specifically. One of the things that my architectural background has allowed me to do is I work basically across every sector. Because one of the things we learn as architect, I always like to use the metaphor that we're trained to have a body of knowledge that's a mile in diameter and up to an inch deep. And you and I have both gone through very intentional, rigorous training on this. I absolutely have no qualms about starting a conversation with somebody from a field that I know nothing about and patiently understanding and just enough about their world that I can sustain a conversation with them. That's very easy to do. And it has allowed me to support people in a lot of different sectors. You know, I don't need to be an expert in what you're doing. And really the work that I'm doing, I'm not a business coach in the sense that I'm going to look at your profit and loss and help you figure out what's broken. I don't need to see any of the data of your work. I'm really looking at you as a whole human and saying, where are you showing up with this very pointed focus? And you're missing the whole picture, and you're showing up in a way that you will perceive an attack so that your resilience is really low. And I'm modeling to you and guiding you through and supporting you in experiences so that you actually feel like you can have that broad focus that allows you to take in more data and see, literally see and hear things that you've been missing. And the people who come to me, they hire me because the outcome is they want better results. They want the career ascension. They want the board to accept their initiative. They want to have a better relationship with their team, right? And when you do that, when you can go in safe and have a broad focus, you literally are able to see and hear things that you were missing. You're able to say things you weren't saying before. You're able to feel more comfortable there and have experiences that you weren't having. And that is the foundation of getting new results. At its core, that's really what I'm doing, as I'm saying, people who feel stuck in a rut, and I'm showing you how to get your wagon wheel out of the rut.
I love that. So how do you find your clients? And that's going to be different. You said you've gone through different iterations, but there's the initial, how do you break into this new practice in a way?
Interestingly, it's changed in the last 6 years. I filed papers for my company 3 weeks before the first COVID lockdown. And at that time, I knew I didn't want to be somebody who was on airplanes all the time. I personally love networking. I think it's really fun, but I didn't want to be on airplanes all the time. My kids were really little. And 3 weeks after I filed my papers, all of a sudden, everyone was willing to hop on a video call.
Amazing. Amazing timing.
it was unbelievable timing. So at the beginning, it was very easy to network with people with their cats and their kids crawling all over them at home and just meet people that way. But there was a very big difference between what was comfortable meeting people online. And the first big barrier I had to get over when I started my business is asking people to pay me. Anybody out there who is thinking about starting a business, do a deep dive on your comfort level with asking people to pay you before you do anything else. So it took me an embarrassingly long time to figure out how to do that and to gain comfort in it. So I wasn't going in with the pointed focus, right? And my first iteration of my business just didn't work. My second iteration worked a lot better. I have forgotten what version I'm on now. Maybe 8 or 9. I don't know.
So your first method was to almost like, I've met someone who's a chicken who just gave away the eggs, and that kind of, you know, you keep a chicken around because they keep giving you eggs. And he built nonprofits to sustain his own practice. Your next version after that, when you changed from just networking, what was that?
I never would have said chicken, but I 100% was a chicken for 18 months.
Yeah.
Totally a chicken. A very well-producing, very generous chicken, right? Mm-hmm. So what was my next version after that? I'm at this point now where I wish I knew birds just a little bit better. Maybe I'll describe it to you. You tell me what the bird was.
Yeah.
So what I figured out in the next version was, first of all, how to narrow what I'm actually doing, right? The chicken was just laying eggs and hoping somebody picked them up. Mm-hmm. Very generalist thing. So I narrowed what I did. I got really specific and I said, you have one of these, I don't know, 6 problems, and here's what the solution looks like. And, you know, the first pass, Katie, it was not very graceful. It was not very elegant, but it was much better than the chicken. It was an upgrade. I don't know what bird that is.
Well, there's a lot of hunter birds who have great eyesight and can see a problem from a mile away, like an eagle can see a rabbit from 3 miles away. So if they're little problems that you were able to see in someone and then go after, that would be a hunter.
Some sort of a small raptor.
Yes.
Like a little kestrel, maybe.
Yeah. They work very fast. And it sounds like you iterate very fast.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's not where you stuck with your practice. You iterated again. What were kind of the challenges with being so hyper-focused?
I didn't get hyper-focused for a while. I love that confidence that you put in me, but it wasn't true. So for probably another year and a half, so up until about year three, I was kind of being a mediocre kestrel.
Okay.
Which occurs to me as my band name.
I like that.
I'm not sure what kind of music we play, but that's a great band name. And so what I would do is, you asked me how I would meet people. So at that time, it was still pretty easy to meet people in online conferences, and it was still pretty easy to meet people on Zoom. And I built enough of a network that I was able to get referrals and ask people to introduce me to other ones. And I would kind of do a little bit of targeted LinkedIn stuff and see who I was, you know, doing this kind of on the ground networking stuff, which, if I'm being honest, it's mediocre kestrel. Fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. At that time, I had already figured out ways to start getting on stages and doing more talks. So I was maturing in the sense of I was starting to broadcast a message instead of trying to just like see a mouse from a mile away. There was a huge change that went in when I raised my prices. So mediocre kestrel was not charging enough to pay the bill. Or I should say mediocre kestrel was charging a minimum dollar amount to minimally get by, but not to succeed. Which is for everybody out there thinking about starting a business. I want you to do a gut check right now.
Yeah.
Can you ask to be paid a price that makes your skin crawl a little bit and then add more to it? Can you do that? If you can't do that, maybe don't do the business. I wish somebody had told me that at the beginning, because then I just would have figured that part out.
Yeah.
So what's the next version of that bird? I stopped accepting contracts where somebody would only pay the minimum amount. I started being more selective about who I would work with.
Mm-hmm. So fewer, larger projects.
Mm-hmm. I'd refined what I did. I refined my messaging about what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I focused on people who actually had a budget to pay me more than the previous clients had had. So it was more discernment at that phase. And it was more broadcasting.
Yes. So the broadcasting piece, there's several birds that do have a signature call where they change that call and people are attracted to that call. And so something like a mockingjay who is calling out and can mimic sounds so that you're speaking the language of these different industries that you're connecting with. That can be sort of the attracting piece so that you're not going after projects and hunting them down so much. You're trying to bring them to you. So you're more of that signal carrier.
Yeah, I feel humbled by the title Mockingjay, but I do see how it fits.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
And so is that what you're doing now or have you gone on?
There's more.
Let's hear.
There's a lot of bird evolution here. So I think I did that for about a year. And then I had to come to terms with the reality that my price was not high enough.
Hmm.
It's like I had identified the problem, but I was mediocre about the solution. What's the architecture metaphor? I figured out how to ask the right question.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the right materials to be able to build what I had in my head.
Yeah.
I tried to make a model out of felt. That's what I did.
You were using type 5 construction.
There you go.
And you needed to be using like type 2
there you
or
go.
1. Yeah.
I wanted a type 2 building.
Yes.
And I was hitting it hard with type 5 and a lot of the type 5 materials were actually cut off some scrap.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. a lot of nails in that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the next version of it was me actually looking hard at this business and saying, still just sustainable. Still not charging enough, still absolutely not clear enough about my marketing, about my message, about what I actually do. That phase was really squirmy for me, but I went through it a lot faster than I did in the other stages. And once I got clear about exactly the problem I was solving and I started saying my price and not yammering after I said my price, just letting it sit there and letting people go who weren't ready for it. I stopped chasing, right?
Yeah.
Getting my calendar filled up.
Wow.
My financials got in alignment and I got really good at delivering the product. That was a huge leap for me. I don't know what that bird is, but that was a good bird.
If you are attracting and you have that very distinctive style, that's almost a peacock.
Oh, totally.
Where you are there and people know you, even by a single feather, they know exactly who you are. They know what you offer and they're there for it.
Totally. Also, peacock in Spanish translated back to English is royal turkey.
It's what?
Royal turkey, pavo real.
I like that.
Yes, I became a royal turkey. That feels right. Nice. And then I'm currently literally in an iteration right now.
Oh.
So I just, as we are talking, I unofficially have flipped the switch so that you can buy my book, but I haven't told anybody about it yet. And I think about the time you're releasing this will be right before I officially announce it at my talk at South by Southwest. So
nice.
This version of it is getting on better stages, like South by Southwest, being extremely surgically cutting about exactly what I want to work on. And if I may, I actually learned this lesson in grad school and it just got better at applying it to my business now. So in grad school, you know how many reviews we did per week? It was a lot. It was like every couple of days we were doing some sort of pinup, right?
Oh, yes.
At some point in grad school, maybe halfway through, I realized that what I talked about would be what we talked about.
Mm.
And in particular, the last thing that I said, especially if it was a question to the audience, would be what we talked about.
That is brilliant. And it's good. There's some students I know who listen to this who need to hear that. That you can, it's almost like manifest destiny, that you can start to determine the future if you end things a certain
Any
way.
Any of the students who are doing pinups and critiques, listen to these words very carefully. Whatever you put on the wall, or project on the screen or put on the screen, whatever it is, whatever you show the crit and whatever you talk about is what you will talk about. End your presentation with a question that invites delightful engagement from your critics and they will be on good behavior with you during the critique. Never talk about what's not there because it's not there. Don't talk about it. And it won't be a problem. And that applies so directly to where I am in the current iteration that I'm working on.
Ooh, so what you're not telling us.
Uh-huh. So now that you've heard all of these things that I've done, from the chicken to the royal turkey,
yes,
to the mediocre kestrel, right? So what I'm very clear about right now is what I really want to do, Katie. I want to take people who have already gone through coaching, who have already gone through therapy, who have probably already seen the psychic, who are at the top of their game and they can see their goal and they just can't figure out how to get there. These people are dogged. They're determined. They're in companies that have at least 200 people in them. They're in a leadership position in that company. And they have the budget and the willingness to get very uncomfortable with me, to literally go through the forge and come out at the as the version of themselves that they design. They become designers of their life instead of being at cause to their life. That's all I want to do. And I've actually, 2 days ago, you introduced me as a transformation guide. I changed my title.
Got to update your website.
Private advisory.
I like that. Private advisory.
I'm not for everyone. One of the things I've learned in every day of my life, I'm not for everyone, Katie.
And you know what? That's honest, because I think if you think you're for everyone, you're
for no one.
Not aware, because as broad as you can be, you know, it's okay that you don't fit everyone. If we only had clothes that fit everyone, they would be terrible.
It would be awful. We'd have so many buckles and straps. Oh my gosh.
So true.
So much elastic.
It's good to be exploring these differences. It's good to be thinking of this mythical journey that you've had, which leads to the bird thing that I think I'd like to share with you.
Please.
All right. At first, with this rebirth that you take your clients through, it seemed like a phoenix would be the right fit, but that just got me on this journey of thinking of mythical creatures. So creatures with wings. So they're still birds-ish. But this is one you may not have heard of. It's a modern mythical character, which I think fits with this modern approach that you're applying to your leadership strategy. It's a Jaquin.
What's a Jaquin, Katie?
A Jaquin is part of the Elena of Avalor series in Disney, and it's a new princess that they developed.
Now I have the song in my head.
Yes, exactly. So the Jaquins are the guardians of the kingdom. They are jaguars with wings. They are very colorful. So it still feels like that peacock attracting. But that aspect of that guardian, I almost did griffin. But I think the Jaquin is the more modern version of this, where they are guardian, they're guiding. And it's just the relationship that you have with your clients that you're taking them through this. And in that universe, there's a whole spiritual realm that they help navigate between, and they fight all these mythical terrors. But for you, you are taking on these challenges, which are the modern monsters in business. You're taking on people's personal monsters, but you're not the one going through it. You are their guardian. And so they're riding on your back,
yep,
going through these challenges and getting through this transformational stage.
Katie, you nailed it. And I don't know about the Jaquins on that show. I said a second ago, I'm not for everybody. I will bite. I have sharp claws.
Yeah.
I'm not that nice about you not getting serious about your life. I'm not. And it's not for everyone. And for the people who do the best with me, oftentimes what they've experienced is that people aren't very honest with them. So when you get to the level of CEO or COO or whatever your C title is, people stop being forthright with you. Mm. And if you're somebody who is always been ahead of your peers, people are not very honest with you about what's difficult about you. I have teeth and claws, and I use them.
I like it. I love hearing how you've evolved this business, how you're creating your own realm that you are serving. And it is still so integrated into the design thinking and the architectural strategies we were taught back in school. And so it is, I feel, super relevant and super helpful to this audience, even the little tidbits for the architecture students to talk through all these things. And so at the end of this, the one question we skipped at the beginning is, how would you describe your business in 3 words?
You know, you sent me this question ahead of time and I have struggled so much. I'm going to just force myself to do it right now. I'm going to use my own teeth on myself.
And I'll bleep it out if I have to.
Yeah, go ahead. 3 words: clear, catalytic, uncomfortable.
There we go.
And I know you didn't want 4. Unapologetically uncomfortable. Maybe that's my band name.
There we go. I like that too.
Mediocre Kestrel was a lot more fun.
Catalytic is the frontliner.
Yeah.
Like it. Well, Lori, what is the new book? Let's do a little plug right now.
So the book that has just come out is called The Dissolve. And it really truly is, it makes clear what my process is. So in the 6 years that I've been doing this, and honestly in the 36 years that I've been developing it, what I do with my clients when they come through this with me is really only 3 steps. So the whole thing is called The Dissolve. The first step is to name their invisible barrier. And I talk a lot about invisible barriers in this. And just, I know it's a word that I made up because you own your own business, you get to make up words. An invisible barrier is the thing that has you behaving in the way that keeps you getting the same results over and over and over again. And it's invisible because it's really hard to see your own. Oftentimes other people can see them very easily. And the first stage of it is naming it. So when we name an invisible barrier, oftentimes it sounds a little bit something like caffeinated manager or clock demon or the smallest cut. I named one yesterday, helped somebody name one. We called it reluctantly closeted. This is a person who's making a big career transition that they invested a lot of time and energy in the first version of the career. So it's giving it a name that helps you catch it, helps you catch your invisible barrier. And once you've named it, you can start developing a relationship with it. So step two is called soften it. Oftentimes your invisible barriers feel a little bit like you're a marionette on strings, and they are controlling your actions. So the second phase of soften it is almost like realizing that you're on strings and looking up and being like, could we talk about what you're doing here? So you're building a relationship with this thing that was previously unconscious or unseen. And the third step is called sashay through it. And I called it that because it is truly meant to be enjoyable. And what that is once you've named your barrier and gotten good at identifying it, and you've softened the relationship so you can have a conversation, sashay through it is really about designing who you're ready to be and rehearsing that version of yourself and enjoying the rehearsal. Because the more you enjoy the rehearsal before the actual event happens, the board meeting or the presentation or whatever it is, the easier it will be to act as that version of yourself when the actual event comes. So that's the dissolve in three steps. The book is very tiny. I work with people who don't have a lot of free time. It's about half length, you know, a third to a half the length of a normal book. It's got a lot of white space in the margins. It's meant for people who have overwhelmed nervous systems. You could very easily read it on a short flight.
I love that. And I love the sashay image because I've got girls in dance. I know sashay is a specific ballet move, but there's an aspect to that that's, like you said, repetitive, it's disciplined, but it's also a beautiful expression of yourself.
And sashay is just to follow, you know, the step. Mm-hmm. If you've seen them sashay, you just like you put one foot out and you follow that one. And really what it is you're using, you know, neuroscience tells us all of this stuff about our brain and our mind that we can use in our body. You are literally using your awareness to design who you're ready to be. The dance step is putting one foot forward. You're designing who you're ready to be. And then you're practicing the enjoyment of following.
I love that.
And the thing about invisible barriers is once you've named them and softened them and practiced sashay, they just dissolve. It's not a mountain to climb. You just sashay right through it.
That's beautiful. So I'm sure along the way, there's the term following the rabbit hole. You've had to navigate what are the aspects that are going to help enrich your understanding and make that 1 mile wide understanding of the world, but only an inch deep. And so what's a gut check? Like when you start going down neuroscience or other avenues, how far do you go? What are you checking about your own learning process to let you know that it's the right rabbit hole to be going down?
Katie, this is such a good question. So leaning way deep into the architectural training, the second part of we're trained to have a knowledge a mile wide and up to an inch deep is so that we can find beautiful paths through it. So when I'm asking a question about my business or developing something or even developing a talk, I'm going to give a talk next week and I'm working on the slides today. Really what I'm doing is I'm taking the shallow and broad knowledge that I have about the audience, about the problems that they have that they're ready to solve, about what I do, how I use my claws, right? I'm developing a beautiful path through it that is an enjoyable presentation. That is something that they can pay attention to while they're probably wanting to multitask at their desk or eat lunch. You know, this is a noontime webinar, right? You've attended these, you know how this goes. There's not a lot of listening, right?
Oh, yes.
So I'm using my comfort level that I was trained to have in this broad and shallow body of knowledge to design beautiful paths through it. And I'm also using what we learned so early on, which is how to toss an iteration if it's not serving me. And so it's the same interrogating questions that we learn in architecture. Does this meet the goals? Does this fit within the constraints? Is it beautiful? Does it produce delight? Would people enjoy it if they walked through it? I'm asking the same questions. I am still doing what we were trained to do, which is to bring an idea out of the ground. I'm just not digging with backhoe anymore.
And you're not building with wood and steel. You're building with ideas and concepts.
Building with ideas and paperbacks and Kindles and talks.
But you're still creating spaces for people to exist in and enjoy in a way like good architecture that changes their lives.
100%. And Katie, I don't know if you remember what I did my Master of Architecture thesis on.
I do. A lot of cameras.
A lot of cameras. I used the cameras to create a modeling tool, a 4D modeling tool, so that I could very quickly make spaces out of light and experience them. My thesis was really about how we experience different volumes as humans. And the cameras were just a way for me to very quickly make a volume.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rapid prototype tool. That interest and that curiosity has really never left. And in a way, the work that I'm doing now is a much faster rapid prototyping tool. When I'm doing the name it phase of the dissolve, we're rapid prototyping through identity. We're rapid prototyping through, if you were aware of your clock demon, how would you approach that hour between calls? Who would you be?
Mm-hmm.
That's not that different than rapid prototyping what a space feels like.
So interesting. Oh, I love this. Lori, do you have any last bit of advice you'd like to leave with people who are maybe the opposite audience to who you serve, but solopreneurs who aren't necessarily who you're targeting right now, but what is a piece of advice that you would share with them?
I think the advice that I'd like to share is really what I would go back and tell myself 6 years ago. And I've given little chunks of it here, but maybe just to say it concisely is, if you're thinking about starting a business or if you have started one and it's minimally viable, it's really important to enroll people you trust, not necessarily like a business advisor, but just like somebody who knows you, the friend who will tell you when you have spinach in your teeth, that person. And do a reality check on what you're building, because it's so easy to develop an emotional connection to what you've built that you're not objective about it anymore. And if you can enroll somebody you trust in a way that allows you to rapid prototype through the versions of what you're offering so that you can gain clarity in messaging, so you can get really, really specific about who you want to work with, the problem they have, and exactly what you do to solve it, it will help you move into the next bird metaphor that Katie will beautifully create for you.
I love
it. Be the Jacqueline or whatever you are, whatever your version of it is. Get all the way to the end of the evolution and like, help you do that.
Well, and who knows if it stops at Jacqueline for you, Lori. I'm very interested to hear.
I can't wait. I mean, you did such a great job. I'm kind of in my mind, I'm like, I wonder what the next one is. Can we just skip to the next one? I mean, Jacqueline's pretty great.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to have the claws. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Lori. This has been such a fun conversation. I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a delight.
Lori shared a chilling statistic about burnout in the construction industry. And as architects, we work alongside these occupations, guiding the work and supporting the people who bring our designs to life. The fact that so many in the construction industry are suffering is further call for change. And the change needs to happen in the way we structure our businesses so that we are supporting individuals within project teams at a deeper level. And that can start with our own job description, which is our first takeaway, to design a job that doesn't feel like work. It seems as mythical as the Jacqueline itself. Imagine if you could be paid to do what you love each and every day. And what if your job didn't feel like work? What if you didn't feel exhausted at the end of the day? Lori is that Jacqueline. She's the guardian, encouraging her clients to flip the script, to dissolve the invisible barriers in the way of their success. And in this scenario, success doesn't just mean more money. It means feeling a challenge at work and being stretched in a way that helps you grow. And Lori is encouraging her clients to be intentional and shape their course, which leads to our second takeaway, to design your business. Continuously make intentional decisions that shape your business to improve all aspects of your work. Lori's business evolved. She didn't stay in one neat category. She refined her messaging and she adjusted her offerings. And she experimented. Nothing was sacred. Her business evolved. And that's the design process we learned in architecture school. I remember being tasked with cardboard models on day one. And on day two, we presented those precious models to our professor, who immediately started tearing them in half, ripping off the pieces that didn't work. showing us that these things weren't sacred and that we needed to continue iterating, to continue designing. We needed to challenge our initial assumptions because as good as we thought things were, there was a lot that we needed to improve on. And so what aspects of your business need to undergo another iteration? How do you need to revise your practice, reposition yourself in your ideal market? When you allow yourself to revise, reposition, and refine who you serve and how you serve them, you are able to move closer to alignment. An alignment of your skills, your goals, and the change you hope to make in your clients' lives. And having all those pieces in alignment is like having the wind beneath your wings. Birds that are flying with the wind, with the currents, are able to simply soar. There is less effort and you're able to protect your own energy, which means you can be more present for the people who matter most in your personal life. So when your work aligns, it feels like you have the wind at your back. You feel like you're riding on the back of your personal guardian, like the Jacqueline carrying you forward to tackle the monsters. Which leads to our final takeaway, to simply dissolve the monsters. In Lori's new book, The Dissolve, she outlines a three-step process for overcoming invisible barriers. First, you name them. These barriers might look like perfectionism, overwork, or a reluctance to charge what you're worth. It could be anything. Lori's point is that when you name it, you can see it. And then you soften it. You develop a relationship with it instead of pretending it isn't there. And then you move through it, not with force, not with denial, but intentionally. Your bird may change, your marketing strategy will evolve over the years, and you will realize that you are not for everyone, which isn't bad. It's simply adding clarity. There are so many architects practicing in as many different ways. And the goal isn't to be everything for everyone. The goal is to build your own practice so you can feel the wind at your back, pushing you forward. Just remember that even though we are solopreneurs, we are not alone. Lori built advisory boards. She leaned into her community. And you can build your own community or join a mastermind like those in Entree Architect Network. There are books like The Dissolve to help guide personal reflection and overcome these barriers. All around you, you're surrounded by peers, mentors, and trusted advisors who want to see you succeed. I want to see you succeed. I want you to assemble your own guardians. Transformation happens when we illuminate the path for one another. So with the right support beneath your wings, your business and your life can thrive, helping you soar to new heights. Season 2 of the Flying Solo podcast is sponsored by the Minnesota Architectural Foundation, whose mission is to invest in excellence, leadership, discovery, and equity within the profession of architecture. To join the Flying Solo movement, visit the website flyingsolo.live. That's flyingsolo.live for links to our Instagram, Substack, and the Wingbeat newsletter, a weekly dose of birdspiration and practical tips to help you grow your business and your confidence as a solopreneur architect. While you're there, take the bird quiz to discover which bird best matches your solopreneur style. For even more resources and encouragement, you can find all the Flying Solo episodes on the Gable Media platform at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com, the premier destination for podcasts about architecture and design. And if you're looking for community, connection, and real conversations, check out the Entree Architect Network at entrearchitect.com. There's a link in the show notes. Whether you join one of their masterclasses or the free Facebook group, you'll find a community of small firm architects sharing ideas, challenges, and wins, proving that while we may work solo, we're never alone. As Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, says, it's all about doing better practice and better work every day. Thank you for listening to Flying Solo. I'm Katie Kangas, and my hope is to empower you, aspiring architects and creative entrepreneurs, to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.